I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, we're just going to talk to a creator about their cool stuff again, because apparently video games don't exist. I don't know what's going on there. But today, I have Dave Baker, writer of Everyone is Tulip, here to talk with us about, you're never going to guess it, Everyone is Tulip. Dave, how are you today?
Good, man. Thanks for having me here, Chris. It's fun. I'm excited to talk about some comics, maybe some video games. Who knows?
You know, I really wish Nicole had been able to show up for this, because I think it's always cool to have the multiple people from the creative team here. So we're just going to have to make this so much fun that she regrets hanging out with her family.
I completely agree. Nicole Gu, artist of Everyone is Tulip, you're going to regret spending time with your loved ones as opposed to Chris and I.
I've had multiple people say it, you know, it can happen.
We could have been her new family.
We really could have been. I've offered to be so many people's older brother or dad, depending on how they want the age thing to work out.
I mean, what's up, Chris? You want to be my dad? Let's do this. I don't give a fuck.
Let's do it. I mean, there's no way I'm old enough to be your dad, but let's do it.
There is no way, but you know what? I'm excited to have same age dad. And it's going to be great, because we're going to have more in common than normal dads and sons have. We're not going to have any weird competing things, because we do different stuff. And we're going to have a shared common interest. We're going to talk about video games and comics. It's going to be great.
Let's do it. Let's start off here talking about Everyone is Tulip. What is your elevator pitch to get people to read Everyone is Tulip? Besides, this thing is really good. You should read it, or you'll make me cry.
Yeah, so Everyone is Tulip is a 160-page graphic novel coming out from coming out from Dark Horse. Comes out June 16th, maybe? Who knows? I keep getting mixed signals. They keep saying it's either going to be the 16th or the next weekend or the next week, because shipping stuff right now is in kind of flux because of COVID. And it's about a young woman from Arizona who moves to Los Angeles to try and become an actor, and quickly realizes it's very difficult to do that, and then gets sucked up into the world of high-stakes YouTube performance art, which is a real thing. And she kind of becomes this overnight viral sensation, and her life changes very, very rapidly, and it forces her to reckon with kind of profoundly troublesome questions, like how far would you go to be able to get what you want, and what are you willing to compromise on, and where is your line in the sand of things that you won't do. It follows a small kind of central cast of characters that are all kind of struggling to keep themselves afloat here in Los Angeles, and Becca Harper, the main character, is kind of our viewpoint into that world. It's written by me, illustrated by Nicole Gu, co-colored by her, and colored by Ellie Hall. I'm very proud of the book. I think it came out really well, and I'm very excited about the response that it seems to be getting from people, which is always, you know, very gratifying when you spend a couple years making a thing, and then it comes out, and people are like, wow, this is actually, like, pretty cool. It's a nice feeling, much better than the deafening void of silence that I've definitely experienced self-publishing since I was 17.
Well, I don't want to give you a big head or anything, but this thing is really good.
Chris,
so if I was there, I would give you a hug.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that, Daddy Chris. Chris Daddy.
Father Chris. Whichever way works, I don't care.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, man. We worked really hard on it. Ellie did a beautiful job on the colors. Nicole co-created the story with me and developed all the characters with me and lavishly illustrated it. And the book would not exist without Nicole. She really willed this thing into being. And I think it's a very tangible milestone in her career. Like, you can see her leveling up as a creator and an artist and a craftsperson. It's very, very impressive to work with somebody that is that talented and that skilled.
So where did the idea for the story come from for you?
We had been very interested in the people that are kind of occupying that sphere of social media a couple years ago. You know, there's a few of them. Dalvita is a Russian performance artist who does something kind of similar to what our character in the book does. Poppy is another one. Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared is another. They were like a group of people who made Muppet shows that were very surrealist and avant-garde and bizarre. And they would just upload them to YouTube and they would kind of go viral. And so Nicole and I got very interested in these people a couple years ago and very kind of preoccupied with how their lives worked and what they did in their free time and how you actually monetize this content. So we started talking, like, what would a book look like set in that world, and how could it be made in a way that would be endemically comic books, you know, that would be organic to the medium and utilize the medium of comics in a very specific, interesting, and way that wouldn't be replicable in a different art form. We arrived at a few kind of narrative conceits and mechanics that are in the book, where there are panel arrangements that represent certain things you couldn't do in another visual medium. In the comic book itself, there's a motif of 9-panel grids that all have cell phones in the grids, like an actual, you know, drawing of the full cell phone instead of a panel, which is something that's very interesting to me, the kind of intersection of technology and existence, and then both of those things and how they relate to the shape languages and illustration form factors inherent into a 3-dimensional comic book object. The book itself kind of just evolved over the course of us becoming interested in these people, thinking about them, discussing what we could do that would be set in this world that would make for a compelling narrative that we could discuss and interrogate ideas larger than just, wow, these YouTube videos are weird. Like, the book itself is about a much bigger idea, right? It's an interrogation of kind of artistic principles and the idea of compromise.
See, this is the part where I wish that Nicole was here so I could say, hey, these pages where there's just like 27, however many, because I forgot to count, images of Becca dressed up as Tulip. How much fun do you think she had coming up with costumes and stuff for all those?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know she did. You can tell just by looking at the pages, because the costuming and the kind of character design work on display is just so fantastic. It's both fantastic in the, you know, adjective and fantastic in the descriptor, where, you know, at one point the Becca character is wearing a chair for a hat. Like, they've like sawed out a circular section of the chair and she's wearing like a sombrero. For context to the videos that our main character kind of partakes in, she plays this character called Tulip, and every video is exactly the same. She kind of wears an elaborate costume and she looks at the viewer and says, everyone is Tulip. And it's this kind of repeating theme throughout the book that plays into the narrative in various ways and also kind of has different metaphorical meanings in the different sections of the book. But I was just blown away by Nicole's character designs. Like, I mean, because those, I didn't script any of those. Those, like, in the script, it just says, Becca is standing on a white endless, there's 9 panels of her saying, everyone is Tulip. Panel 1, Becca, everyone is Tulip. Panel 2, Becca, everyone is Tulip, for 9 panels. So it doesn't, there's not, I wasn't like, make it a weird couture statement on like clowns or something. Like those are all her, and she really like breathed life into that that area of the book and made it feel very real.
How much of yourself were you able to put into this one? Because I'd imagine there's
a
decent amount being in LA yourself.
Yeah. I think there's a lot. A lot of people have kind of brought up the fact that Becca is from Arizona and I am from Arizona. And they've kind of asked, you know, is this book autobiographical? Are you Becca? So on and so forth. Is she a stand-in for you? And to that, I would just say, like, this book is deeply autobiographical, but not literally autobiographical. The reason Becca's from Arizona is so I didn't have to research a place. I can write about how much Arizona sucks. The autobiography comes from, you know, this idea of sacrifice, this idea of compromise, this idea of what is reappropriation in the fine art world, and is it actually just appropriation? Is there a shield that protects people of obscene wealth from cultural critique in a way that wouldn't be applied if they were a person of color? Is there a mechanism that allows individuals who make a name for themselves off of the idea of theft just to keep propelling themselves in that world? Almost like if you start on the righteous path and then veer into a lower tier, you'll be held accountable. But if you're just always a piece of shit, like, apparently people are just okay with it. All of these kind of esoteric or kind of art theory ideas are things that I struggle with daily on a very one-to-one basis, you know, like living in LA, trying to pay rent, working as a writer, making comics, which is a notoriously predatory industry. All of those things factored into the book and what happens with characters and the themes that are explored. I hope it's not preachy. I don't think it's preachy, but that's not for me to say. I think the book is just pitting these various characters against larger than life ideas and forcing them to reconcile with their decisions, past, present, and future. I also would just say that, you know, sometimes when I talk about the book, it sounds a little like, check out the big brain on Brad, where I think the book is really funny. Like, I think it's a very, like, down-to-earth kind of almost comedy. It's like a really black comedy in the classic theater sense, where there are characters pursuing obscenely bizarre goals and taking obscenely bizarre pathways to meet those goals. And I think that sometimes when I'm describing the book, it might not sound funny to someone. It might sound like a textbook from an art history class or something. But that's probably just because that's what interests me. Those questions and reconciling with them are what I find fascinating. But it also just has dumb jokes. Like, it's got silly stuff in it too.
You know, I think of it as kind of like trying to tell somebody the plot of Letterkenny. And
yeah, totally.
Yeah, you're never going to get the humor going in there, but if you can get them to watch it, they're definitely going to see it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like there's so much of my lived and Nicole's lived experience of being in Los Angeles and dealing with fake people and having weird conversations where people are trying to sell you their screenplay in line for Starbucks or whatever. Like, you know, there's so much kind of bizarre in jokes that are like that I personally think are really funny, and I do think they translate, but they're just so silly to me that this place functions the way it does. It really is, for better and for worse, you know, a very singular place. There's not really a place that functions a lot like LA anywhere else.
I mean, we seem to be getting, or at least I seem to be seeing, a lot of things focusing on social media lately.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to go back and finish it, but, you know, we just had Every the Body do its little run. Guy at the mm-hmm. store gave me bad reception to read. How do you think this fits in with things like that?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good question. I would say that I think our culture is just reckoning with the way social media is warping reality. Like, we just had the tangible one-to-one effect of, like, Facebook got Trump elected. Like, it radicalized a bunch of people for on both sides of the aisle, right? Primarily on one more than the other, but it really, you know, Twitter has been used for political uprisings. And I think our world is finally realizing, oh, this social media thing is like fundamentally rewiring people's brains. You know, TikTok is being used right now to like listen to an entire generation of children, figure out what they want, and then it's going to be used to sell them that thing, whatever it is. Like, it's a really weird, dark time. And I don't think a lot of people have realized how dark it was until, at least here in America, until the Capitol got stormed. I think there was a very tangible, like, oh, maybe this is not so good. Maybe this just isn't just like my uncle posting a weird thread again. This is like, there's like real world consequences to this. And, you know, those DNA strands don't necessarily intersect with my book, but I think they impact reality, and we all have to deal with that. We've all been trapped in our homes for a year and a half, and there's no way out other than the glass window that we all carry around in our pockets that's giving us cancer right now. Like, it's a very strange, bizarre world. And it makes sense that comics, which is a medium founded on like individual stories, you know, it only takes two people to make a really great comic, or it only takes one person to make a really great comic, as opposed to the millions of dollars and near army of people it takes to make a movie. Like, of course that's gonna impact the stories that are being told in the comic book medium. As far as, you know, how social media impacts Tulip, I mean, it's pretty apparent. It's literally what it's about, right? But I would say that as opposed to being a genre hook of like, the social media aspect of it is almost the genre, and then the book is about something bigger than just social media. Does that make sense?
It definitely does, but I also really liked your face when I busted that question out on you. So, ha!
No, that was good. I loved that. That was great. Because, you know, I've been doing a few of these, and you get asked very similar questions, which is great. You know, I love answering. Anytime somebody wants to ask about the book, I'm very, 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 very excited to talk about it, because we've worked on it for literally years. So getting the chance to discuss it in any way is fun. But that's not something I had ever been asked before, and quite frankly, I hadn't considered in terms of those specific books that you had mentioned. It's an interesting correlation that you made there.
So what changed for y'all in the process of making this book?
Oh man, so much. When we first started out, it was going to be a little bit more kind of genre oriented, almost like you're talking about with Breathe the Body and stuff, where it was going to be more kind of like, have you ever seen the movie Perfect Blue or Millennium Actress? Either of those? The Satoshi Kon animated movies?
I haven't seen either one of them.
They're very, very good. Highly, highly recommended. But they both kind of have this like weird dream logic to them. Satoshi Kon is very obsessed with like transitions and match cuts. So like Millennium Actress is about a woman being interviewed, and she's literally going back through her memories. So she like gets up, walks out of a house, and then as she leaves the house, she's like in 1940s Japan, you know, in Hiroshima or something like that. It's not literally a scene in the movie, but it's the equivalent of that, where she starts walking through her past. And it's about this kind of aging actor searching for meaning in her life and trying to figure out, was it worth it or not? And Perfect Blue is about another actor who is kind of an idol, you know, in the way that like Japanese culture has these kind of like singer actor people who are referred to as idols, not in the biblical way. And she becomes very famous very quickly, and this person starts stalking her and becomes obsessed with her. And the movie itself is about this character reckoning with her fame. And so our initial version of Everyone is Tulip was kind of a mixture of those two things, where it was like Satoshi Kon, dream logic. You know, maybe after she went viral, the Tulip character would become a separate character, and Becca and Tulip would kind of be at odds with one another, and maybe Tulip would almost be like a Tyler Durden-esque alternate personality, maybe. There were three or four versions of that that we had kind of batted around. And then ultimately, we just decided that that wasn't the avenue we wanted to take it, and we took it in this more kind of grounded interpersonal drama direction, where Becca definitely does grapple with the alternate persona that is Tulip, but in a very more real world grounded way.
I mean, have you found yourself having to take on a persona of comic Dave versus everyday Dave?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody does to a certain extent, especially with the internet. I think anybody that claims that they don't embrace a persona just isn't aware of it, or doesn't want to admit and break that kayfabe. You know, I think there are versions of myself that are maybe a little bit more laid back and kind. I think there are versions of myself that might show up online sometimes where there's a little bit more vitriol or antipathy towards abuses of the comic book community, or, you know, a breaking down of what I would perceive as the moral core of our community that is facilitated by massive multimedia conglomerates that are only interested in mining what I think is the greatest medium on earth for film and television profits. You know, that doesn't mean that I don't actually think those things, because I do, but I think that there is, you know, unfortunately, there's a brand manicuring that happens in today's world where you are known for a specific thing and you get likes and retweets and comments, and then you start doing more of that, and then you start chasing that. And, you know, that's something that I personally am trying to be a little bit more centered on and not do that, not embrace that, in air quotes, kayfabe, just because I think it has very short-term benefits that are highly tangible, and long-term downsides that are imminent. Just like, there is no way around them. I mean, when you look at people in the comics world who've done those things, like, you know, Brandon Graham or Brian Wood did some of that stuff. You know, there's a lot of creators who make noise, in air quotes, they get a lot of attention, and then it just backfires on them hard. So will I succeed in attempting to be a centered and even-keel person? I don't know, but I'm gonna try. And at the very least, I'm gonna try and project some of that serenity outward, even if it's not always there inside. Because, you know what? What else can you do, right?
Pretty much. I mean, I've tried to make my online persona be a very nice, caring person, because it's something I can hold up a lot better.
Yeah, and the weirdest thing about that too is that, like, I attempt that as well, but we both know that conflict creates story, story sells. And so there's this very strange thing when you're in a creative industry and you're trying to get eyeballs on your work, the easiest thing to do is say something flamboyant and aggressive or controversial. That's why the internet phenomenon of hot takes has evolved, because it's just individuals attempting to gain clout by having a contrary or obscene opinion that is, you know, against the mainstream. And do they always believe those things? I don't know. But does it get people attention? Yeah, it does. It works.
So how did you and Nicole get together to work on this one?
We had made a book for Silver Sprocket called Fuck Off Squad. It's a coming-of-age romance comic about queer skater kids in Los Angeles. And the book had done pretty well. And our Dark Horse editor, Connor Knudsen, found us at a convention and was like, hey, I really like your guys' work. Do you want to do a book at Dark Horse? And we were like, yes, please? That would be cool. And, you know, we talked about a few different projects with them, and ultimately this is the one that they were interested in publishing, and I don't think it hurt that, you know, Nicole had worked on a Batman family title. You know, she illustrated Shadow of the Batgirl, and I think that makes money people a little bit less nervous when they're like, oh, DC Comics published you. Let's do it. So yeah, and Nicole and I have been making comics for a couple years now. You know, we've made a bunch of stuff together, dating back to when I used to make this webcomic called Action Hospital. She was one of the artists on that book. And we kind of just, you know, we hit it off. So we've been making comics basically continually the entire time.
I had another question and it ran away.
I mean, it's pretty easy, man. You could just almost ask me anything and I'll talk for 5 minutes. I think you asked me like 3 questions this whole time and we're already 25 minutes in.
Those are the best ones, though.
It definitely makes your job easy, right?
Oh, I know, right? At least until the end when I have to go edit it, because then everything is bad.
Right, yeah.
Just like everyone is Tulip.
Hey,
we brought it back around.
Yeah, I think the theme, though, the common theme of the book is that, you know, everybody struggles with these questions, right? You know, you ask me, do I have an online persona? And, you know, of course I do, because we all do, you know, and as does Tulip, which is why the title Everyone is Tulip, I think, plays on like 6 different levels once you've read the book. Like, there's all of these different narrative functions that title, which is a quite frankly kind of cumbersome and strange title to say if you haven't read the book, it really, once you have read the book, it really kind of informs it, and it plays into the ending, which is a kind of, you know, a thing I won't spoil, but certain decisions are made at the end of the book that kind of reflect the character's mindsets. And I think the book hopefully leaves the reader asking questions and leaves the reader pondering how the title fits in to the work in a non-literal way. Because obviously the main character is in these videos and says everyone is Tulip through the whole book. Like, yes, that is the tangible ones and zeros of why the book is titled that. But it's also not. And I'm fairly happy with how... And I'm usually my worst critic, man. I'm usually like, that thing doesn't work, and I wish we had done this better. But that's something I'm pretty excited about, how the book itself kind of shaped up and how some of the themes that we were playing with initially really coalesced over the course of making it. And a lot of that is just because of Nicole. She really, really added to the process over the course of drawing the book. She really breathed life into the characters and added scenes and added moments that were so vital in hindsight. Like, looking at the finished product of the book, it's like, oh man, so much of this is like just pitch perfect because Nicole executed it in a specific way, or because she added a specific beat to a scene.
And I think some of my favorite parts of the book are just different people reacting to Becca and kind of recognizing her, and then when they really do, but more so Becca's reactions to that. And just, I mean, you can have the words in there and her reacting, but that's where you really need the art and the little facial expression, and just the way Nicole was able to capture the annoyance to the being pissed off that somebody's being annoying at them. I mean, that sells the book to me right there.
Yeah, completely. Or even the fact that, like, the way she draws Becca over the course of the book changes. The way she draws Tulip, which is a separate character but also the same character, is different. Like, when she draws the Becca in makeup as Tulip, she draws her eyes larger. She's almost drawn like a shoujo manga character. Whereas when she's drawn as Becca Harper, the normal person, she's got little dot eyes, usually almost kind of like an American indie comic, you know? And so there's all these like very soft, subtle cues here and there that Nicole is weaving throughout the book in very subtle ways that, you know, it wouldn't occur to me on the first reading, but, you know, since I've had to read this thing 150 times, proofread it and get it ready for the printers and all that stuff, like it there's so many very intricate little things, like you're talking about, like the way she reacts, the way that reaction changes over the course of the book. It's really cool to see Nicole mature as an illustrator like that.
Seeing if there's anything else. So out of all the main characters in the book, which one would you say that you are the most like?
Oh man, that's hard. That's hard. I don't know. I think on a good day, I'm probably the most. I think the main characters are Becca Harper, who's this like struggling actor who gets cast as the main character in these videos. Stanley, who is the kind of director of all these videos, and he uses a pseudonym, Paradox XL, and he's kind of this manipulator, kind of charlatan who tries to appear smarter than he is. Eve Rodriguez, who is Becca's roommate, and she's like a classically trained actor, but she's kind of lazy, so she hasn't really been like out there beating the pavement trying to find acting work. And Chloe, who is a single mother who designs all of the costumes and the couture outfits that Becca wears in the shoots. And those are the kind of central cast of characters in the book. And I think, you know, there's little bits of me in all of them. Like, I think sometimes I'm kind of a pretentious douche, which is the Stanley. I think sometimes I am a know-it-all, which is the Eve. I think sometimes I am the hopeless romantic and not willing to compromise or struggle with compromise, which is the Becca. And then other times it's just pragmatic, you gotta pay bills, which is the Chloe approach. And I don't know that I'm necessarily one or the other, but I think there's little bits of me in all of them. I think it's probably, I don't know. I think the short answer to that is probably Stanley. I'm probably the shitty, pretentious douche most of the time. but that's, you know, that's me being a little self-deprecating. So I think that, you know, I would be curious if Nicole was here what she would say. I'm not sure.
I'm going to have to see if I can figure out how to pull that off. Slip it in an ending.
Yeah. Which one are you most like? Which one did you relate with?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I want to say the Becca, because I think everybody wants to say that.
Yeah.
I think it would be a mix between Becca and Chloe for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am either, okay, I'm going to do this. In one way or another, it's like, okay, I'm going to go do this. And whether it's going to be like the hopeless romantic style or the just, okay, this is the nuts and bolts, this is how I'm gonna get things done.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think the funny thing about it too is I don't know that there's a right answer to any of that, because all of those characters are kind of struggling against their core nature anyway. Like, I feel like the only one that really knows who they are and is at peace with that, for better or for worse, is Chloe. Like, she knows what compromises she's making, and she's making them willingly because that's the only option she has. Whereas Stanley is constantly striving for this bigger idea of like breaking into Hollywood, becoming this legitimate, in air quotes, artist, making these grand statements on reality that maybe aren't even his ideas. And so, you know, him, Becca, and Eve are all kind of struggling, trying to not be what they are, where Chloe is fully embraced, for better or for worse, her standing, and she's just being pragmatic with it. What was your experience reading the book? Like, when you read it, was it what you thought it was going to be? Like, did you go into this and you're like, oh, another YouTube comic?
No, I went into this with, like, zero expectations of anything. Because it was very strictly Nicole being on Twitter saying, hey, who wants to talk to us about our book? And me saying, yes, I will want to talk to you about your book. And slightly less golden books about it from both sides.
Right.
But, you know, that was pretty much how it went. So I was like, okay, cool. It's called Everyone is Tulip. This is going to be weird. I hope it's a fun weird.
Yep.
And then I only freaked out for about 20 minutes when I was trying to pull it up on my Kindle because I forgot that I can't open PDF files in the comic reader.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or at least,
weird.
I mean, I don't know. I might have just set it up wrong. So then I went and opened it up. And then it was a whole lot better once I could actually get it open.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
But y'all did it in such a different way than any of the other YouTube comics that I've seen. So, I mean, it's not like this is a thing I've read 500 times before with a different set of characters.
Yeah, definitely. That was absolutely the goal, right? Is to make a comic that was, on its surface, kind of like an air quotes influencer comic, like Snot Girl or something like that, but was about something substantially more than just, check it out, we're making a critique of the Instagram world or the Facebook world or the YouTube world or the TikTok world or whatever. Like, the goal is that it interrogates larger themes, which, you know, I think you can tell that, as we've been talking about, like, the aspiration is there. Whether the book succeeds, that's not for me to say. I don't know.
I mean, you define success for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there's, like, internal success where you're, to me, there almost is no failure now. Like, the book is a success because we made a book, we finished it, we own it, we published it through one of the largest comic book companies, and it's going to come out. That's the win. If it sells a lot, awesome, that's icing on the cake. If it's well-reviewed, awesome, that's icing on the cake. If it leads to bigger and better projects, awesome, that's icing on the cake. But the real success is that we did it. We finished the book, I got it through the, you know, editorial approval process of a company, it's going out through major distribution channels. Like, there's people in, you know, I've been emailing retailers trying to entice them to maybe up their orders. You know, we've been making book plates and doing videos and offering new signings, and there's, like, shops in Sweden and Iceland and Amsterdam that all ordered the book, which is, like, that's surreal to me. That is, like, my goal when I first started making comics at 17 years old or 16 years old or however old I was. I mean, that was way before that. I've been making this as a kid, but when I was seriously, like, I'm going to do this as a career, was, like, you know, I just wanted to be somebody in the scene. Like, I wanted to be somebody in the back of that Fantagraphics We Told You So book, or somebody in the back of, you know, the James Warren Empire of Monsters book, where there's just, like, a photo of the office and there's, like, a guy in the back and you're like, oh, weird, that's so-and-so. I didn't know he worked there. Like, I didn't know that Mark Wade worked at Fantagraphics for, like, 6 years or some shit like that. How weird is that? And that's kind of what I've always wanted, is I just always wanted to be a guy in the scene. You know, I wanted to be someone contributing to the medium that I love so dearly, that I think is the greatest artistic medium on earth. And I've struggled my entire life to get anybody to pay attention to the work and care about the work and think the work was worthy and, in air quotes, anoint the work. And since starting making stuff with Nicole, we both found tremendous amount of success because we've toured the country and we've self-published and we've done it doggedly and repeatedly and put the work in front of people over and over and over again and refused to relent to the torrential downpour of rejection. So the book itself being released by Dark Horse, to me, is a major success. Like, that's the win to me. Getting it in front of people that don't know me personally, that's the win, you know?
Well, maybe to throw another win in for you, I'm not going to tell my store that I want this. Because okay. I'm just going to see if they bring it in, and then I'm going to see if my guy says I should read it.
I mean, look, man, I want you to do whatever you're comfortable with. But is there a reason why you would say that? Just because you want to see if they're cool or something?
No, mostly because there's a guy at the shop whose tastes line up with mine well enough to where he gets to pick something for me every week, and I want to see if this is what he picks.
Interesting.
Because the second I order it, he's not allowed to pick that anymore.
Well, if you were to suggest that they... Which one is your shop? What is your shop? Where do you shop at?
I am going to Captain's Comics and Toys in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, cool. I know of that shop, but I've never been there.
You should go. It's really good.
Yeah. I've only been to North Carolina...
South Carolina.
South Carolina. I've only been to South Carolina. I've been to North Carolina once, because that's where Heroes Con is, and I've been to South... No. Maybe I've never been there. I've never been there. Because Heroes is in North Carolina, right?
Yeah, it's in Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've only been to Charlotte, A, for the convention, and B, I hung out a couple days afterwards and went around and looked at all the stuff there, because I was like, oh, I've never been here before. This is cool.
I hope it wasn't too much of a disappointment.
No, it was cool. It was good food, friendly people. It was fun.
Now, imagine all that good food, but then ours is better.
Oh, really? What's the place to go to? What's the quintessential next time I'm in ye olde Carolina?
When you come down to Charleston, I will definitely take you out to get gelato sandwiches. It's like a gelato ice cream sandwich, except the buns are pancakes.
Whoa, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's what I lead with for everybody. That's pretty much the reaction that everybody has.
Yeah, that sounds great.
But the food here is just so good.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know where I would take you. We'd have to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, pancake sandwiches sound pretty fucking cool to me. You know? But what's not to like?
The calories. But I ignore that.
Yeah, I mean, you only live once, right?
Exactly.
You'll have to let me know if they end up ordering it. I definitely have emailed them about it, because they're on my list of retailers. But who knows if anybody actually saw that email?
Well, I can tell you that they got a Goblin that Dark Horse just put out, and it was sitting on the shelf. So there is at least a precedent for getting these Dark Horse books like this.
Cool. That's great. I love it. Fingers crossed.
And if they don't have it the first week, then I'll go up to my guy and say, hey, dummy, why didn't you get this book in? Now you have to get it for me.
Well, I appreciate that, Chris. I really, that's a resounding endorsement, man. I really appreciate you picking it up, especially since, you know, you've got the PDF. You could just be like, thanks, man. That was a great PDF. Lovely talking to you. Bye.
I could, but then how am I going to convince people to let you do more?
That's true. It's true, man. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I hope that, you know, this goes well and I can continue growing this relationship with Dark Horse. It was a lot of fun working on this with them. And, you know, Nicole and I had a ball making this book, that's for sure.
So if you had any advice for somebody looking to get into comics, what would you tell them?
Self-publish, period. Start small, make stuff, self-publish, go to conventions, meet people, make friends. It's gonna suck. No one's gonna buy your work. You're gonna show it to editors. They're gonna tell you you're terrible. You're gonna smile and say thank you. And then you're gonna keep doing it. You're gonna keep making work, and it's gonna get progressively less shitty, and you're gonna waste a bunch of money, and you're gonna waste a bunch of time, and you're gonna ask yourself, why the fuck am I doing this? But you're gonna keep doing it, and eventually it'll pay off. I guarantee it. It sucks. I wish there was an easy answer, I wish it was just, oh, just draw in boxes. Nah. Teach yourself InDesign, self-publish, print on demand, submit to publishers, but know that none of them will publish you until you've published yourself. Do Kickstarters, go to every convention possible, make friends with other cartoonists, and be a nice person. Try and be a nice person. And when you're not, apologize and be like, sorry, man, that wasn't very nice. It's amazing. It's amazing how far you can get in this industry just by, like, being around and being a sort of nice person.
A lot of people have said that. It really makes me think that you guys have run across some not nice people.
Yep. It's almost like there's a lot of not nice people out there. Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing.
It's almost like there's a bunch of people trying to gatekeep people out of making comics.
Yep. Almost. Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, the self-publishing thing is not easy. Like, it's easy to just say, you should self-publish. But it is not an easy road to hoe. It's expensive. Making physical comics takes up space. I've got, like, thousands of comics in my apartment that nobody wants. But they provide me an existential solace because I can look over at those 2,000 books on the wall and be like, when I'm dead, somebody's going to have to make a funeral pyre out of those. I think getting into comics is both simultaneously easier and harder than ever before. There's lots of people publishing lots of really cool stuff. There's lots of people making lots of really cool stuff. So why wait till tomorrow, friend? Start making shit now.
So I have two more planned questions for this.
Yeah.
First one, who is your favorite Muppet?
Ooh, favorite Muppet? That's hard. Well, are you asking me who my favorite Muppet is because, like, which one am I the most like? Or who is my favorite Muppet?
No, just who's
like
your favorite.
Okay. As a kid, it was Gonzo. Because I didn't know what he was. It was before the movie where they revealed that he's a Martian. So I was just like, what is that guy? He's got this weird hook nose. He's hanging out with chickens. Like, what's going on? So I really liked Gonzo as a kid. And I also really like Fozzie a lot because he's just big and goofy, and I love his hat and his little bow tie, but no clothes. Like, he's the only one of them that doesn't wear clothes except for a tie. Like, there's like two schools of Muppets. You either don't wear clothes like Kermit, or you wear clothes like Miss Piggy. But the fact that Fozzie just, like, has a tie is so funny to me. The answer of which Muppet am I? It's Kermit. I'm Kermit. It sucks, but I'm the, like, the boring leader archetype in every... I'm the Cyclops. It just... I'm the one that's like, all right, kids, we're putting on a show. Let's get the band together. Like, I'm always the one corralling people to go do stuff and inviting people to do stuff and organizing parties and organizing art projects. Like, I put together an art project called Shitty Watchmen where me and 12 of my friends redrew Watchmen page for page, panel for panel, just really poorly. We did the same thing with Dark Knight where we redrew the whole book page for page, panel for panel, just really poorly. And yeah, it's just, I guess it's just kind of hardwired into who I am. I'm the, look, a hill, we must all climb it person. Plus Rainbow Connection, that's a good song, man.
Well, yeah.
Rainbow Connection. Come on.
So it sounds like you're more movie Kermit than Muppet Show Kermit, which is okay.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm definitely movie Kermit. Yeah, for sure.
I prefer Muppet Show Kermit with him yelling at people.
Yeah, I like the Muppet Show Kermit too, but there is something very sweet and wholesome and kind of direct about the movie version of him that I really like as well. It's not like Star Trek where movie Picard and TV show Picard are just completely different entities. Like, there's still a core DNA for both, to me anyway. Although I guess in the original show, like, that season one Picard, where he's just, like, yelling at Wesley, like, get off the bridge, Wesley! It was, like, again, a third character. There's, like, three versions of Picard, basically.
And second, if people want to hear more from you or try to make your pile of books that are unwanted smaller, where else can they find you around the internet?
Yeah, if you want to come take some of these books away from me, I'd be very appreciative. You can find me online, heydavebaker.com. If you want to see me making weird, dumb videos, you can find me on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram at xdavebakerx. Or if you want to listen to my podcast, which is a deep dive explainer podcast called Deep Cuts, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. We pick a topic each week and then walk the listener through the ins, the outs, and the nitty-gritty. So they can kind of just, you know, appear like an interesting and idiosyncratic person at their next forced social function. We've done episodes about Buckaroo Banzai, the acclaimed 80s cult film. And at the end of it, we got the original writer and director of the movie to come in and create a 10-minute narrative sequence where two of the actors from the original movie came back and reprised the roles for their characters. We did an episode about the file sharing service Napster and how it claimed just destroyed the music industry. But we did it as a 2-hour musical with 11 original songs, and me and my co-host Andrew Price, we both sing for the entirety of the episode. So if that sounds like stuff you're into, Deep Cuts.
Well, as always, I'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Absolutely. Deep and cuts? That's hard.
I mean, you already have X's in your Twitter name. The cuts could be with a Z. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? It's got a silent X in the beginning and a silent Z in the middle. It's crazy.
As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast, where you can mostly find me just liking to like things on the internet and booking way too many interviews with creative people like Dave here, because way too many people are making cool things and I'm trying to pick their brains enough to make a halfway decent comic myself. And maybe one day I will be able to put all of their advice together in one giant episode so that I can listen to it and give myself inspiration.
I support it. If you ever need printer recommendations and or someone to pick their brain, just send me an email, Chris. I'm only an email away.
I'm going to assume you're being serious because you look serious.
Oh, I'm 100%.
And I'm going to
do
it.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% being serious. Yeah, why would I say that if I was fucking around? No, for real.
I don't know.
I love talking about trying to make comics. It fucking sucks. It's hard. No one gives a shit. Our culture doesn't value comics, but I do.
Sweet. I'm definitely going to hit you up later.
Sounds great to me.
If you want to help support Play Comics, then probably the best way to do that is to either tell people about the show and get them to listen, force them to listen, ask them to listen. I don't care. As long as you get them to listen, it's all cool with me. Or head on over to playcomics.com/Patreon, where it takes you over to Patreon. And for just $1 a month, you can get these episodes early, except for this one, because I forgot that life happens and things exist. And when there's things to do all weekend long, things don't get edited early. But most of the time, they get edited early, so you can hear them early. It's really cool. If you want to hear some other really good geeky shows, then head on over to GunnaGeek.com, where, just like the name suggests, you can hear other wonderful geeky shows, and there's lots of cool stuff over there, so you should go check it out. If you like the music that I'm really talking on top of right now, head on over to SoundCloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. Most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, preferably a bunch of stuff from an indie creator, because that's who I'm talking to today, so I'm going to make it thematically appropriate, and go find yourself a new favorite character. Also, a little peek behind the curtain here. I know I told Dave that I just wasn't going to say anything to my local shop, but I went into my shop on Wednesday, and I, for some reason, was thinking 16th was a very good day for this thing to come out. So, you know, I went, I looked, I talked to Connor. It wasn't there. We looked. It wasn't there because it's not coming out till the 30th, I think is what he said, a time that is in the future, because that's how time works. So I have already ruined the thing of seeing if my shop will have a copy come in, but I know that my shop will have a copy coming in for me. It just might not be the day it comes out because I told them to get it for me so late. That being said, you know, I have the review copy that Dave sent me, so it's, you know, I can still read it. But you should definitely go buy it because it's really good. I promise.